The English language has a very big vocabulary with so many words borrowed from other languages. Still, there are words that just don't seem to quite fit our needs. Pair those up with the times we try to say two different words at the same time and we end up making up new words. The process is deliberate for today's guest, the author of the book That Should Be a Word, a language lover's guide to chorgasms, povertunity, brattling, and 250 other much-needed terms for the modern world. Lizzie Skernick stays plenty busy. She wrote the That Should Be a Word column for the New York Times Magazine, wrote 10 teen novels, wrote a column on young adult classics for Jezebel.com, and a memoir about that experience called Shelf Discovery. So in the process of making new terms a lot. Thanks for joining us, Lizzie Skernick.
Thank you for having me.
You faulted NPR in the introduction of the book, I noticed, for not using As It Happens for a show title. You probably talked to a few other radio hosts who pointed out that there actually is a show by that title from the CBC.
Well, it actually, you know, there wasn't when I first had that problem with it. I remember thinking of that, and then finally there was, and I thought, okay, thank you.
Right. Somebody finally took care of that, yeah. So does the That Should Be a Word column in the New York Times Magazine predate you?
No, it's just me. And actually, the magazine changed editorship. So they have a different word column now that writes about words, and it's really great. But I was lucky enough to have this column for a few years.
So what got you going down this line? What got you into the business of neologisms?
Well, I've always loved to rhyme, and I've always loved puns, and I've always sort of made up secret words so that no one would know but me and my friends were talking about. So when this column came up, those all really combined into this talent I didn't even know I had, actually.
So you're, a lot of this is made up yourself, but have some of these come to you? Have some people given you some gifts of their own words?
Oh, no, these are all mine.
Mm-hmm.
These are all my crazy brain.
Is there some deeper effect of neologism, some, I don't know, something on a psychological level other than just making us smile or even laugh?
Well, yes, because I think, you know, the whole point, you know, neo means new, and it, you know, it means that our culture is changing, and not only that our language is changing, but that we need new words, you know, to address our culture and the things that we're all doing and all seeing every day. And I think that's great because, you know, it's great to preserve the past, but it's great to make space for the future as well.
Have you kept count of the words you've created since you started doing this?
Oy, no. a lot. many. Some were bad, though, so I just left them out.
Okay. Well, the oy indicates it was a bit of a burden, though, or at least to think about it in those terms. The numbers, oh. I mean.
Well, yeah, because I don't think about them in terms of numbers. I think about them more in terms of themes, you know, because you have words for technology, and those fit into the digital theme. And, you know, digital is how we can't stop checking our devices all the time. And then we have words, you know, for our new kid center culture, we have the pornography chapter. You know, and then for the culture of money and our economy, there's banks. So it was, you know, the book isn't just sort of a list of new words. It kind of organizes itself around all the big changes our culture has experienced, even just in my lifetime.
Well, you get right into chapter one, and you mentioned pornography. How did talk about the process then of creating some of these terms?
Well, pornography happened to be one that I personally needed because I was trying to get pregnant while I was writing the book, and then I was pregnant, and then I had a baby. So the amount of online information or information from TV or videos or the radio, just the amount of media that you can absorb when you have a child is astonishing. And it was actually overwhelming to me, so I just quit and I read medieval mysteries in which, you know, in which the women would just walk and walk around castles and drink wine as they were giving birth. And that was the only information I could stand.
Wow. So, but that's quite an amount of stuff. But I can see the term pornography then. It's just, it's everything out there about birthing babies is just all over you all the time.
Yes. And also, we love it. You know, that's the other thing. You know, when you start reading mommy blogs, you need to read another one and you need to read another one. So it's also the kind of guilty appeal of that.
You know, and I guess the very fact that some of the terms and some of the most clever terms seem to come from this particular chapter, because this is such a rich vein to be mining. So for example, the word brattle.
Brattle is to talk too much about your children. And what I like about that word is it was one of the first words that showed me that I put a lot of different words in the words. There, you know, it's that word, I think, has seven words in it. It has brat and battle and rattle in the two meanings, you know, baby rattle and to rattle on, and prattle. And if you call your child a rat, I guess if you want to call your child out, it also has to rat out your child. So that was when I realized I wasn't only doing portmanteaus. My words were also somehow layering themselves so that when you read them, other words were in there. And that was even really fun for me because it's not something I do consciously.
I noticed Emily and I were both taking notes here and writing down the words that you were saying that make up that one. I mean, do you actually end up doing some diagrams sometimes of the terms that end up going into a term like brattle?
No, but what's funniest for me is I often don't see them, and other people point them out. You know, one of the first words I made up for the domestech, you know, for the technology section, was smirch, and that was to search someone looking for bad stuff, which I do all the time. But then my friend's husband pointed out that word also has smear in it, to smear someone. And it also has ear, like to hear bad stuff. So it a lot of the time, those are even a surprise to me.
Well, not just to talk about the fact that you're also besmirching, or at least trying to look for information that would besmirch someone.
Yes.
Potentially. All kinds of fun things in there. All kinds of fun things in the book, That Should Be a Word. Lizzie Skernick is the creator and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange. We come back, talk about some of your favorite words or some of the ones you've heard here already. Back on the Exchange with Lizzie Skernick and you in a minute 20. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We'll be talking about the Jordan Cove Final Environmental Impact Statement released today in about 20 minutes. Right now we're talking to Lizzie Skernick about words she's made up, neologisms. Her book is called That Should Be a Word, A Language Lover's Guide to Chorgasms, Povertunity, Brattling, and 250 other much-needed terms for the modern world. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about the words Lizzie has created and their meanings. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So sticking to the pornography chapter about all the terms involved with parenting, a tyrant.
Yes.
It's a great one. That one really jumped right off the page at me.
Yes, I have a tyrant. I have a 2-year-old. And a tyrant is just a little kid who runs everything through being tyrannical.
Now, the word prambivalence, this takes a little more explaining, I think, than some of them, just to figure out where the parts came from.
Well, prambivalence is to not be sure whether you want to have a baby or not. It's, you know, a pram and also being ambivalent. But a friend pointed out, you know, after you have a baby, you start to go into this big state of not knowing which stroller you even want to buy. So you experience sort of a second wave of prambivalence.
Now, this one needs some explaining because it's not the word you think it is. Pacifier, spelled P-A-C-I-F-I-R-E. And so what's the meaning there?
Well, pacifier is when you come through the initial circle of hell of parenting, you know, after the pacifier is probably like the first 6 weeks. Although I always think of pacifier as really the first pain of breastfeeding. then that resolves, but for a while you're the pacifier and it's not pleasant at all.
Oh yeah, I've heard that from quite a few mothers. The word indie pregnant is pretty clear, single mom to me. Now what about clanarchist?
Oh, a clanarchist is someone who has a non-traditional family, someone who doesn't believe that, you know, the nuclear family is the only kind of family. You know, for instance, I know a man who independently adopted about 9 different kids from different countries, and they were all teenagers. You know, he didn't adopt them when they were young. So, and they have a great family. So that kind of person would be a clanarchist.
Okay. And how about drafter birth?
Oh, drafter birth. Those are the kids you bring to bars.
I didn't even know. I wasn't even aware this happened. People bring kids to bars?
Oh, my God. New York is ridiculous. Everybody brings their kids to the bars. There's actually some bars that now don't permit children because they were sort of becoming half bars, half playgrounds.
Really? So they just said, forget it. No more strollers?
Yeah. Oh, no, yeah. They said, no more kids. This is for drunks, not kids. This is only for drunk people who can't walk, not kids who can't walk.
You need a different kind of stroller for that,
yeah,
that
exactly.
Segment of population, sure. All right, so the terms Spitz and Lichtim, these are companion terms, I guess you could say.
Yes, to Spitz is to use your spit to wipe off someone's face. Disgusting. My father was always spitzing me. And the lichtim is the person who has been spitzed.
It took me from yesterday until today to realize it licked. Okay, I get it now. The victim of the licking, the lichtim.
Yes, the lichtim.
Okay, now it makes a lot more sense. And then we finish up the chapter on pornography with probably the great payback word, gestitution.
Destitution. Yes, that's when the mother or father finally gets respect from all the hard work they had to do as parents, from the child who is now just suffering as a parent. So you get a lot of calls from new mothers to their mothers just apologizing for everything they ever said or did because they suddenly realize how hard it is.
At that point, the now grandparent gets off the phone and says, yes, destitution.
Yes, exactly. They go to Florida again.
Lizzie Skernick is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Her book is That Should Be a Word, a language Lover's Guide to Chorgasms, Povertunity, Brattling, and 250 Other Much-Needed Terms for the Modern World. Chapter 2, Martyrmony. Ow, seems a little harsh on marriage.
I know. It's really because someone was teasing his wife about it being a sense of duty to be married to her, but he was teasing. So I made up martyrmony as a word for that. But I don't really know anybody who lives in martyrmony. So staying in marriage out of a sense of duty, I think, is pretty rare.
The charts in each chapter that appear, you have the words, you have arrows connecting them and all that sort of stuff. What's going on there?
Well, it starts from the word that sort of expresses what the chapter is really going to be about. You know, you have something like pornography, so then you know that's the main chapter. Or you have something like phygital, so that's the main chapter for the technological thing. And then they dig down a little deeper into words that maybe not everybody uses, but words that some people nonetheless really need.
I get the sense, Lizzie, that a lot of this comes pretty naturally to you. You mentioned you like to rhyme and that sort of thing. So, but are there times when you put some real work in to try to develop a word?
No, but sometimes it's never real work, I would say, but sometimes it takes my brain a little while to produce it. You know, it feels like my brain is kind of like a secretary's fingers going through a Rolodex. So, you know, something like chorespondence, which is mail you don't want to respond to. You know, chorespondence is an enormous part of my life. It's just all chorespondence. But that actually took quite a long time for my brain to produce. I mean, I must have wanted that word for a few months. But then a lot of them only take a few minutes. So, you know, I do them live on Twitter. So it really just depends on the word.
That reminds me of the term I've been using for years about the trips you take when you don't necessarily want to visit the people on the other end, obligations.
Oh, yes, obligations. Obligation is it's really fun to see the words that everybody thinks up in Urban Dictionary, and I always used to double-check just to make sure no one had thought of my words, but no one ever had, because my words are just really weird and personal. They're not sort of the general psyche words.
Well, they instantly make sense, though, on a couple different levels. It seems like there could be a couple of definitions for chorgasm, which we'll get to in a moment. I want to save that for the end of the martyrmony chapter, because here's a word that could have gone in either the martyrmony chapter or the pornography chapter, procreating.
Oh, yes. Yeah, and some do span chapters. Procreating is to go out with other people purely for the purpose of reproducing your own genetic line. So these are not people looking for one-night stands or someone to go to the museum with. These are people looking for marriage and children. So that is procreating.
All right. They're dating with the idea of procreation in mind.
Yes.
Some of these are less marriage terms than courtship, like woogle. This is a fun one.
Oh, yeah. Woogle is to put really really positive stuff about yourself online in order to get someone to date you. So people's Instagram accounts are filled with woogling, you know, themselves on mountains or at a, you know, homeless shelter or eating really good food. That's woogling.
The what a nice and interesting person I am stuff that you put on social media.
Exactly, exactly. Right.
Okay, another ouch here after the ouch for martyrmony, relationship.
Oh, yes. Relationship is the dangerous bad relationship that you nonetheless keep returning to.
All right, so it's just not a good thing for you.
No, but most of us grow out of that. But I would say everybody has one relationship where you just hurt each other again, and then you say, okay, now we're done.
Yeah, that's enough. That Should Be a Word is Lizzie Skernick's book about 250 words she's made up for the modern world. You can join us on The Exchange at 800-838-3760 or by email jx@jeffnet.org. And we finish up the martyrmony chapter with a couple of favorites here. Chorgasm and stopulate.
Oh, yeah.
Real bedroom terms here. Take the kids out of the room.
Yes, I had forgotten stopulate. Stopulate is, you know, I think it's pretty self-explanatory. But chorgasm is usually, if you are having a chorgasm, it's usually a sign that, you know, the relationship is nearing its end.
Because it's more chore than orgasm. Absolutely. And so stopulate, so who's stopping why? I didn't quite get that part of it.
Oh, stopulate is to stop in the middle to declare the terms of your arrangement. So it's like stipulate, you know, so you might stop in the middle and say, okay, but we're just going to stay friends, all right? Or, you know, this is just for one night, or, you know, you have to stay for breakfast. So that's stop and stipulate and copulate. And I got to say, people really stopulate a lot nowadays.
Really? Just to make sure that some of that's good, though, as we talk about college campuses and that sort of thing.
Oh, yeah, exactly, exactly. Stopulating is, you know, something that now people really feel a little bit freer to do, which is great, even if it can be annoying.
Okay. good term to use, though, for sure. That should be required reading on college campuses, perhaps.
That's true, the guide to effective stopulation.
Mm-hmm. So dromineering, this one took a little brain work on my part to try to decode before I read the definition.
Oh, yeah, so dromineering is when it's people who rule situations by being histrionic. So it's, you know, you use a lot of drama and you're domineering. And I think we all know somebody who gets their way out of being histrionic and not out of just a nice, normal argument or question.
You mentioned, and this is just about process, but about looking up words online to make sure they're not used. It seems like a lot of people are doing this, though. Is it my imagination, or is this a fertile time in history for creating neologisms?
You know what? I think it is a fertile time in history because I think people have a lot of freedoms that, you know, if you even look just back to the 60s, you know, we get to choose who we date and choose who we marry, and we have our own devices and we can have our coffee our own way, you know, and of course with social media we can speak to people in different countries and we have whole different ways we communicate. So I think, you know, culture is growing and changing faster and faster and faster. And, you know, and I also think people really enjoy talking. You know, we get to have Facebook, we get to have Twitter, we have our cell phones. We have so many different ways to talk to one another nowadays that are not face-to-face. And I think anytime you have words appearing, you're going to get a lot more wordplay, you know, than in the caveman times.
That makes a certain amount of sense. I wonder then if you've discovered people using shorthand text, you know, leaving out the vowels or something on some of the words you've created here.
Oh, I don't know, maybe. Although I have sometimes made up a word just by putting in the wrong letter by accident or leaving out a letter. So I think that's also a way language changes. You know, people look at a word that they've misspelled. But what was Sarah Palin had a word.
Refudiate? Was it
refudiate, which is a great word? You know, it didn't exist, but and it was, you know, she was misspeaking, but refudiate turned out to be a word we didn't know we needed.
Refute and repudiate together, yeah,
exactly.
gives us a good word. Now, some of these are like holding opposite thoughts in your head at the same time, like superiority.
Yes, superiority. It actually has two different terms, which is. Superiority is one when you suffer for feeling like you're better than somebody, and the other is, you know, to really be better than somebody, but to suffer because you don't like feeling like you're that. And then also, superiority is, you know, when you feel inferior, you might act superior to make up for it. So that's superiority.
Now, some of these terms really do jump out, like saddict is pretty clearly someone who thrives on misery. But I was scratching my head just a little bit about sheltered.
Sheltered. Yes, sheltered. You might have to grow up with a very strict parent to understand sheltered. But that's when you've been sheltered and told what to do so much that you don't actually understand you don't have to do it anymore once you reach the real world. So, you know, it's like if your grandmother always told you, oh, you have to always wrap your shoes in plastic bags before you pack. And then one day you realize, I don't have to do that at all. No one here is watching me. This isn't the Bible. And so that's someone who's been really sheltered. And I think that's why you see people, you see a lot of sheltered people who are from small towns coming to the big city. And then they realize they're actually allowed to do a lot of the things they didn't think they could do.
All the thou shalt nots are now gone behind them.
Exactly.
So, you know, a bunch of these are about people with negative emotions. Canticipation.
Yes. That's how you feel when you have 40 interviews to do. You just think, this is not going to happen.
Touche. How about bluephoria?
Oh, bluephoria. Well, we moms all know bluephoria. You know, that's like when you cry at someone's graduation. You know, you're so happy for them, but then it also means your little kid is leaving home. So I think parents probably feel bluephoria most of all.
Is there a term for people who judge the negativity of other people?
Oh, interesting. You mean to say how...
In other words, to apply some of these labels to someone else. I wonder if that puts a label on us who think about these terms.
Oh, sure. I would say that would be a negrader. Someone who is really grading by always talking about negative things about someone else.
Okay. I asked you already about process and brainstorm sessions, which you don't do. They really do come to you fairly naturally, it sounds like.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And I really, a dear friend of mine called me an idiot savant while she was explaining it to somebody else. And I really feel like that's the most accurate term for it. I don't know why my brain likes to just do wordplay. You know, it's like my computer is always humming, you know, when it's sleeping on wordplay. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why, but that was, you know, that's my lot in life.
Evan in Ashland writes about the word stopulate. He says it sounds more like when your copulation is rudely interrupted.
Yes, that also. That's true.
And he gives an example of that. He uses it in a sentence. He says, Dave walked in right as we were putting the condom on. It was instant stopulation.
I like that a lot.
All right. Thanks for that from Evan. Some of these, sobtimist is one that also jumps out.
Yes, a sobtimist is someone who always cries at good fortune. so, you know, it's like when you get the check for $1 million, you know, you're happy, but you're also weeping. But it's not like Bluephoria exactly. It's like, you know, things are going to go well, and that makes you cry.
Okay. So you're crying, but the good for you. You're not reveling in the bad feelings about the good stuff.
No, okay. No, exactly.
A couple of others I like here, Thera Trooper and Palbatross.
Oh, yes. Thera Trooper. I've had to stop myself from being such a Thera Trooper. A Thera Trooper is someone who sweeps in on a friend who's in a drama and tries to solve all the problems. That's the Thera Trooper. And a Palbatross is just a friend you would love to get rid of, but, you know, you just can't. It's not going to happen. You would have to move away.
Now, a couple of similar ones here. Chumbridge and Slumbridge.
Yes. Slumbridge is slow-growing rage. And
got nothing to do with slums then. Okay, it's just slow rage. Okay.
Slow rage, or your rage is slumbering. And Chumbridge is when you get angry on a friend's behalf, possibly because they're still slumbridging. But I feel Chumbridge all the time on behalf of anyone being rude to my friends. And a lot of people are like that.
Okay, so it's a protective thing. Lizzie, I mean, after 250 of these, I mean, is the process slowing down at all? Or do you have another 250 waiting to go in another book?
Oh, God, I hope not. I do still, you know, if someone asks me for one, though, I can't help but think it up. So if you want to torture me, you can always go on to Twitter.
All right. Well, thanks for enduring the torture of another interview to talk about That Should Be a Word, A Language Lover's Guide to Chorgasms, Povertunity, Brattling, and 250 other much-needed terms for the modern world. Lizzie Skernick wrote it and joined us on The Exchange. Thank you, Lizzie.
Oh, thank you so much.